Start your day the Terraway, Northwest London, Tuesday, 7th of Cheshvan, 1st November. Diane, Dr. Donald Fox. Giving a defective gift, a provocative parameter in Geneva's Das. This week's Terraway is sponsored by Family Barshavsky, Lila Nishmas, Reb Chaim Ben Adoyev, Zechron Lerocha, the 7th Yahrzeit of Reb Chaim Barshavsky, Zechron Lerocha's Yahrzeit will be on Shabbos.
And thank you for the opportunity to share some words of Torah with your world-famous Torah Way. And thank you for the Misadrim who invited me and arranged this. It's got to be more than a coincidence that the preceding Divrei Halacha are a foundation for what I'd like to share with you this morning. We heard about people who are crooked and people who swindle. We're now going to look at it from the standpoint of the swindler. The Torah tells us in Parshas Bahar in two different psukim that we can't aggrieve or oppress another person. One of the psukim tells us, Lo sonu ish es achiv, the person can't aggrieve his fellow, his brother. And the second verse is, Lo sonu ish es amiso, that another person, a human being, which Chazal say might even include a non-Jew, can't be misled, can't be deceived. I came across a story, and I'm going to use that as my platform for the halachic question. A wealthy but stingy man, known as a miser, needed to buy a chasana gift for a newlywed couple. So he went into a store that sold fancy dishes in China, and he went to the proprietor and says, do you have anything that's damaged? The man says, well, yes, as a matter of fact, yesterday someone was looking at a very, very expensive piece and dropped it on the floor, and it's broken into five different chunks, and there's nothing we can do with it. Why? So the miser said, what are you going to do with the pieces? He said, I'm going to throw them out. He says, I'll give you $2 for them. That's American money. And the man said, if you want it. He says, yes, I do want it. And actually, I want you to send it as a gift to this young couple. And they'll assume that it was damaged in the post, in the mail. And that way, they'll feel I bought them a very costly gift. They'll see the label from your store. They'll see the brand of the expensive china. And they'll just have no idea that I bought damaged goods. And he says, okay, if that's what you want, $2 and pay for the shipping. And sure enough, the proprietor of the store sent the damaged gifts to this young couple. Now, some weeks later, this miser is walking on the street, and he runs into the young chassan, and he says, by the way, what did you think of the gift I sent you? So the man says, it was a very, very creative gift, and thank you very much. And what was most unique about it was that the store sent it in five separate packages. Okay. So as much as he tried to swindle and mislead, he failed in the process. Okay, so he got, as we say in the Old West, he got his comeuppance. He got his what was coming to him. But when I read that story, as funny as it was, I began thinking, what would be the halacha? We know that, as we heard from our prior speaker, that we're not allowed to swindle, we're not allowed to mislead people, not allowed to cheat people, and the Torah says it. In fact, the Lo Sonu Ish Es Achiv, the poskim tell us it's really a corollary of Gezela, but it has a parameter to it, which means that if I have something to sell and I unnecessarily up the price in some intolerable way, so, although that's not overtly gezela, but it's a corollary of gezela, it's called onah. Well, it's actually not Geneva's Das. We're going to get to the second pasuk in a minute. We have a surprise coming, but that's the classic onah. And there's actually a whole segment in Choshen Mishpat, in Reish Chaf Zion, which has a subheading that's called the Hilchos Onah Umekach Tos, which has to do with deceptive practices in business, sales for amounts which are just improperly inflated. And in the same way that I'm not allowed to overtly, explicitly go and steal something from someone, I'm also not allowed to overcharge him unduly, and that would be a violation of this pasuk, lo sonu ish es achiv. But the Torah has a second pasuk, and the second pasuk also speaks about ona, and it ends with the words v'yareisa me'elokecha. And so Chazal explained to us that the second clause represents, as you anticipated, another form of ona, and that can incorporate what's called onas devorim, which means we mislead somebody not in a sale, but in what we say to them or what we say about them, which is very, very consistent with what we heard from the Chafetz Chaim. And it also would involve the types of infractions which only you and Hashem know about. In other words, it's not something that Beis Din would be able to assess, or we can compare the sale price with other stores and we'll see that you grossly inflated the price, which would be the first type of ona. But there's a second type of ona, which are the more covert, deceptive tricks that people sometimes pull. Now, those are not mentioned in Siman Reish Chaf Zayin, those are mentioned in Reish Chaf Ches. And they're sort of sandwiched in between the halachas of onas devorim, where the Shulchan Aruch, of course, quoting the Gemara in Chul and Sadi Dalet and Sadi Hey, quoting the Gemaras, that the Mechaber says to us that it's also forbidden l'ramos b'nei adam o lignov daitam, which is what you were speaking about, namely, that whether or not we're dealing with a sale, I'm also not allowed to deceive other people or to have ganevas das, and ganevas das means that, as we would say in America, we pull one over on them. It's predicated quite succinctly by the Shari Tshuva of all places, Rabbeinu Yonah and Shar Gimel, and Rabbeinu Yonah says that the scope of this particular issur would be that I'm doing or saying one thing which creates an impression in people's mind that I have a particular intention, or that I'm giving them something, or I'm sharing some information with them, but I'm actually misleading them that what they're getting from me or what they're hearing from me is not at all what they assume. And that's called ganevas das, and it's a second corollary to gazela. It's called ganevas das, where I'm not in actuality stealing anything from them other than their innocence or their moral right to assume that I'm a decent person and I would in no way aggrieve them. So now the question is here, what is the parameter in understanding the ganevas das, the onas devorim? Does it follow the mekach umemkar, which of course is in the Gemaras, but which is cited, it's codified in Reish Chaf Zayin, does it follow that pattern, namely, that I'm cheating you out of something financially, or would ganevas das not have to involve a sale, but ganevas das, would it also apply to a gift, which means that I would be giving you something and you think perhaps it has greater value than it does, or there's something not perfect, there's something imperfect, there's something deficient in the gift, but it didn't cost you any money. You didn't expect the gift. You got the gift. You've gained from the gift because you now have a possession or a book or a property or an item of some sort that you didn't have. So I've given you something. I haven't taken anything from you. But in the process of what I gave you, you assume you're getting something greater than you got. So would that constitute the ganevas das? Would that be asur or not? Now, again, it's not explicit in Chazal. There are a few anecdotes which Chazal lists in the Gemara, which we could say are talking about cases where there wasn't formal mekach u'memkar. The mekach u'memkar, by the way, the paradigm case would be that I have an item which is worth, I'll use American money because I'm from California, it's worth $100, and it sells for $100, and perhaps I even paid $100 for it myself, but unbeknownst to the recipient, there's something wrong with it. It's got a slight chip, or it's an automobile, and it actually was driven off the lot and then returned. So it's still being sold as a new automobile, but it had, for a moment, a prior owner. So if I would then go and sell that to a person, and they're getting everything they paid for, but they don't know that there is something deficient in the gift. So for Mekach u'Memkar, that's considered onah. That's considered a grieving the buyer, because, as we say, we're pulling something over on him, that he is paying the standard price, and he's under the assumption that this is pristine, unused, undamaged, but there's a slight defect or there's a slight issue with it, although he may never discover that. If he would have discovered it, he would feel aggrieved, he would have felt misled, and that would constitute onah for Mekach u'Memkar. But what about the case where he didn't pay me any money? I just gratuitously gave him, virtuously, I gave him this gift. It was a wedding gift or a birthday gift or just a gift because I like him. Would it matter if there was something unbeknownst to him, not in our case of the five pieces of china plate that were broken, but in an intact china plate, but there's something about this that he may never detect, but I know that there is something missing from the gift. And the case that actually was presented to me was like this. A man goes into a Sephora store. He wants to buy a bar mitzvah bacher, a sefer for a bar mitzvah gift. He goes and he buys a sefer with good intentions. It costs $30. He pays $30. Everything is fine. And as he's thumbing through the sefer, he realizes, as once in a while will happen, it's missing pages. My chasana shas in one masechta is missing an entire daf. I don't know if my shvira did that intentionally to see if I ever learned it and I would discover it. I don't think so. But you have situations like that where there's a slight deficiency, that there's a misprint. I once came across a wonderful sefer called Avodas Avoda. It was a pirish on a masechta, and I looked at the cover and they printed it Avodas instead of Avodas Avoda. It said Avoda Avodas, so the name of the title was reversed. Now, had the seller in the store realized it, he would have taken it back and replaced it with an undamaged one. But let's say I would buy that gift, and instead of having the correct title, somehow the printer erred and put the second word first. And so if you look carefully at it, you see that it's an imperfect sefer. I buy that, I didn't pay any less for it, and I give it as the bar mitzvah gift. But unbeknownst to the bacher, to the recipient, there's something wrong with that. Am I guilty of not mekachtos, because I didn't sell him anything, but am I nonetheless guilty of onah, because I have been merameh, I have done something where, based on Rabbeinu Yonah, he assumes one thing, but the reality is that he's getting something different than he assumes. So as I said, it's difficult to find an actual case in halacha of matana, but we do have an interesting clause. Let's say I'm going out for a walk, and there's somebody that I know, and he sees me walking towards him. He's a respectable, let's say, prominent chosh of a person. And so his assumption is that as I'm walking in his direction, that I must be coming to greet him, that I intentionally left my house because I saw him coming down the street, and I wanted to go greet him. And he comes over and he says, "It was so nice of you to escort me." Now, I had no intention of escorting him. I hadn't even realized he was on the street. So is that a case of onah, which means he's assuming one thing, which is not at all consistent with what I was doing. So Chazal say in that situation that he's merama es atzmo, he's deceiving himself. I don't have to now go and disabuse him of the fact that, look, I know you feel respected and honored because I came out, but it wasn't because of you. I was going for a walk anyway. I don't have to disabuse him of the illusion he has that I was trying to show him respect. If he wants to trick himself into thinking that he is chashiv, and even I think he's chashiv, or whoever it is that comes to meet him, that's not considered onah, because the recipient of the unintended gift, meaning my presence in greeting him, this was something that he misperceived on his own, because he thinks that he is worthy of being greeted by everybody. So that's not considered a violation of onah. But let's say, on the other hand, there is a dignitary coming to town, and I know he's been invited to stay with the Av Beis Din, according to his great kavod, and he is esteemed, and he needs to be staying in places where he's treated like the royalty as he deserves. My Ma'achi Rabbanan, he is a hush of a person, he's being treated with great esteem, and I know he wouldn't stay in my house, I'm a lowly balabas, but I go over to him and I say, I hope you'll come and stay with me and eat in my house. We would be very honored, but I know that he won't. I know he has no intention of staying in my house. I know he's already booked in his residence someplace else, and I know he may not even be somach on my kashrus, and he wouldn't eat in my house. So would that be considered ona, which means I'm casting an impression that I'm all prepared to host him, I've got the meals waiting. So Chazal say that generally would be a case of ona, because I'm deceiving him. I have no intention of hosting him. I know he's not going to eat with me, so that might tiptoe towards ona. Question, yes?
No, I would be happy if he came. I'd be happy if he came. He's not going to come. I would be happy if he came. I'm inviting him.
Yeah.
I'd be very happy if he came. I know. Why is that ona?
So it would tiptoe towards ona because I know he's not going to come.
I'm inviting him. I'm doing the polite thing and inviting him.
Okay, so the key word here is polite, because there is an exception in halacha which means if I am putting forth the invitation with, as you say, a degree of sincerity, and I'm doing it knowing that he won't come, but I know he will feel mechubad, I know he will feel well-treated and respected just because I've made the gesture of an offer. So if it's in order to show him kavod, so then that doesn't constitute ona.
You have the intention for him to come to you.
Well, I would like it if he would come to me, just I know it's foregone that he's not going to come. He doesn't know who I am, he doesn't trust my kashrus, he wants to stay in a better place, and in fact he's been reserved there. But if I'm making this offer to him in order to show him that in this city, when we have a visitor like you, we all want to show you respect. So it's not so clear that
it's
this would be
politeness to invite him. He knows that you know that he knows that he's not going to come.
Yeah. Yes.
It's still social politeness to invite him.
Yeah. He's a little bit clairvoyant.
No, right? He knows that he's not going to come.
Yeah. I was using the word clairvoyant because I'm very interested in clairvoyance. Are you interested in clairvoyance too?
Occasionally.
Okay, because if you'd like to come in 2029, we're having the International Conference on Clairvoyance. However, we had to cancel it due to foreseen circumstances. Okay, so these are good points. Let's try to go now into the heart of the halacha. So what would happen here that, let's say, I have a tin full of candies, and I've eaten all of them, and then I see my esteemed brother-in-law, Hagaon Rav Rashi Simon, and he comes, and I know he doesn't eat candy, he doesn't eat sugar, he's watching his diet, but I want to show him kavod, and I say to him, esteemed shvager, please have some candy, and I know he has no interest in the candy, and I also know I have no candy left in the tin. So would that be a case of ona? And I'm doing it to be mechabed him, but I know that in the off chance that he decides to be mechabed me by taking the candy, I have no candy to offer him. So that normally would be called ona. But if I have candy in the tin, and I know he won't take them, but as you say, as an act of generosity and courtesy, if I offer him the candy, if there is candy that Louis Yitzhak, if he wanted to take it, he could take it, even though I know he's not going to take it. But if my intention is to be courteous and to show him credit, that won't constitute ona. Now, what we're getting at is that the parameters, they look to us a little bit cloudy, which means there's a subjective component that we have to figure out, as you exactly said, this gentleman said, that what does he know that I know, what did I know, what he knows about what I know. So there is a real subjective component, which means what's really going on in my heart? Do I intend to deceive him, or I want to make a hollow gesture of courtesy and covet, which will not be ona, or as the pasuk ends, v'yareisim elokecha, Hashem knows what your real intention is. And do I have to be careful that if I am coming up with a subterfuge that's really going to mislead him into feeling different or thinking differently, based on a false pretense, would that be ona? It's difficult to zero in and figure out what the halacha is. Now, what's going on here? I bought the book. I recognize the book is defective. I'm not going to bring it back to the store. I don't have the time. It's too much tircha. But I paid the full $30 for the gift. But I realize it's missing 15 pages. One of the haskamas came out in the printing, blurred, and you really can't see who wrote what. And the question is, am I showing kavod to the bachar ha-bar mitzvah by giving him a gift? Because he's going to say, oh, Loni gave me a gift for my bar mitzvah. He'll feel good that he got a gift. Will that constitute the case of the full tin of candy or the empty tin of candy? I know it's not a complete sefer. He may never discover that. This bachar may never pick up the sefer again. He may never look to see that it's inscribed by me. But is the gesture enough to make him feel mechubad? And the fact that unbeknownst to him, it's a defective gift? Or is the giving of a defective gift in and of itself, even though he might feel mechubad, is it still going to be a violation of lo sonu ish es achiv v'yareisa me'elokecha? Because I know the reality. So this is something that's not really talked about in the poskim, but I think you can appreciate with my buildup, you can appreciate why it is a she'ela, why it's a halachic she'ela, and it's hard to find between what the Mechaber writes and even going to the Gemaras, it's hard to find an analog to know for sure. So as I said, the classic poskim don't address this case, that in a case of matana as opposed to mekach umemkar, where I'm giving him something he can use and he'll feel that this was a respectable gift, but I know something about it that he may never detect, but nonetheless has a lacking or deficiency. Will I or will I not be violating the type of onah discussed in Reish Chav Ches? Now, I did make a diuk, and then I did find that one recent posik makes the identical diuk, and therefore it may actually have some truth to it. And the wording of the Mechaber, when he lays out this very single appearance of the Geneva Stas, he says, Asa l'rabos es habrios b'mekach u'memkar o lignov daitam. So the way that the Shulchan Aruch lays it out is that I'm not allowed to deceive people in a sale or to steal their das. Now, what I noticed was that he separates the Geneva's Das, which is what I think you were saying, you were anticipating, that he separates out the Geneva's Das from the Mekachu Memkar. So it may well be that he is talking about our case where I didn't sell him something, but I just gave him something, and that still will constitute Geneva's Das. I did find someone who says this, and I think someone else who makes this dig, and I think it may be accurate. But let's go a little bit into, let's say, the mental process, the psychology. When I speak divrei halacha, I don't mix my professional work in it. But when I propose this particular topic, Izzy, I think his name was, who is he here today? Okay, so he's the one who asked me to give this year. He said we were hoping for something more psychological. So, which surprised me, because a few times ago when I spoke her, they told me they don't want to hear psychology. So I proposed the Choshen Mishpat Shaila, but this time they want to think. So I said that there actually is a little sliver of psychology in paskening this halacha. I'm giving him something. I want to absolve myself of the risk of onah by saying that either way this bachur is going to be flattered and honored by my gift. And therefore, that will be the case of feeling mechubad. He'll feel that I'm giving him kavod. And therefore, maybe the fact that he feels honored by the gift will override the concern that I know that it's a defective gift. So I want to say that psychologically, what's important is I'll put him in that frame of mind where he feels honored to get my gift. And therefore, that will in some way dilute the concern about the Geneva Stas or the Onah. So I wanted to introduce something that might tell us that this is not a good cheshbon, meaning that my trying to figure out the effect this will have on someone else is not the issue in halacha. And I'm going to go to Rabbeinu Bachya, and I'll wrap up with this Rabbeinu Bachya. We have a pasuk in the Torah that says, Lo sakal el cherish. I can't curse at the deaf man. Now, the reality is I can't curse at any Jewish person. We're not allowed to curse. We can't curse a Nasi. We can't curse a Jew. And the question has always intrigued our Mefarshim, including Rashi, who cites a Chazal, why does the Torah present this Isser of not cursing people by telling us not to curse the deaf man? The deaf man can't hear me cursing him. He's not going to be aware that I'm saying cruel things to him or about him. He's really oblivious. So why does the Torah give us that example? So Rashi's approach to the pasuk, if you look it up in Chumash, that he says that the reason that the Torah says lo sakal el cherish is so that we make a kal v'chomer. Namely, if I can't curse a person who can't hear me, so definitely I can't go and curse a person who would be aggrieved or who would be offended and insulted when I cursed him. So that's how Rashi looks at why the Torah specifies cherish. Rabbeinu Bachya opens up a whole new hashkafic vista. Rabbeinu Bachya says that what this pasuk shows us is that in interpersonal averus, the discourteous, the disrespectful, the offensive, the insulting, and the interpersonal or the social-based averus, it's not always about the impact of what I do to someone else. It's about the impact of what this says about me. By telling me, don't curse the deaf person, what the Torah is hinting at here, according to Rabbeinu Bachya, is that the crime, the iniquity, is not that I'm going to curse a person and he's going to be hurt by my words. The crime is that if I curse any Jewish person, this makes me into a curser. This makes me into a person who's rude, who's discourteous, who's unpleasant to be around. So it's not so much the impact on the object of my misdeed, but it's the significance acting this way has on me. What is the damage I'm doing to my own neshama by being an offensive person? True, I hurt other people, but what happens if they're not hurt because they didn't hear what I said? And this would be very similar to what the Chafetz Chaim was telling us also, that look at what it means about me. This makes me into an unpleasant person. And that's what the Torah hashkafically is militant against. So what I was thinking here is that we can loosely borrow from that hashkafic framework and maybe understand the halacha here also, that there are definitely cases where I am merames abrios, which means I do things which deceive and offend other people. And that's wrong. That's onah. And there are definitely situations where I cheat people, and that's wrong because that's onah, and it could be gazela also. But even in situations where the person has no clue of the mischief I was up to, the problem is that if I am cutting corners, if I am taking shortcuts in my ethics, if I am bending and breaking the halacha so that I am sort of that Naval Virishu Satora, I'm coming up with a way of doing something that you'll have no clue that you were being misguided, misled, or misinformed, or mistreated. And so you're not an aggrieved party, but I am an aggriever of you. And that constitutes an issue. So I wanted to suggest that between the Pesukim, Lo Sono Ish Es Achiv and Lo Sono Ish Es Amiso, that on the one hand, I can't do something to hurt another Yid. And by the way, the onah, in many cases, does apply to an akum also. And the ganev das applies to an akum. I can't be gonev das habrios, including an akum. And what I'm suggesting here is that the scope of the onah and the ganev das is even when there is no victim. There's no victim. Because he didn't lose anything, he got a gift. It's just not the gift he thought it was. But even though there's no victim, but if my intention was to get away with something, and to give him something which was not what he thought he was getting, even if I can say and rationalize, well, he felt mechubad because I gave him a gift, doesn't make a difference. But I gave him something to be mechabed him, which was inauthentic, that makes me a deceptive, cheating person, and that will be a violation of v'yareisa me'elokecha. Hashem knows what your intention was, and that may still be a violation of onah. And halacha lemaisa la'anias daiti, that if I have something to give you as a gift, and I know you're not getting what you think you're getting, even though you'll never discover it, that may well be a violation of Ganeva's Das.